Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Police and the People. This is episode number 11.
Yes.
We're just cruising.
I know.
We're knocking these things out like we know what we're doing.
I don't know if we know what we're doing, Tim. We're getting there.
All right. On today's show, we're actually just going to do an interview today. We're going to be interviewing Mr. Rogers Johnson, who is the president of the Seacoast NAACP chapter here in New Hampshire. And that's it. No leadership nugget today. None of that, because this is going to be a great discussion. But before we get into that, let's talk about what our company does, who we are, etc. So our company is Granite State Police Career Counseling. We are a law enforcement training company. We have been in operation since 2013. And Josh, why don't you talk about why we do what we do?
Well, I always say that our yearbook answer is that we want to enhance the careers of law enforcement, corrections, fire, emergency responders. But, you know, the more important thing is we want to provide good training. You know, I go to so many trainings that you have somebody up there doing the quote-unquote death by PowerPoint.
Yep.
And it drives me crazy. So what I'm really proud about with our company is that we provide a forum, we provide a vehicle for professionals to talk, to discuss, to at sometimes disagree, to debate in a civil atmosphere.
Right. There's nothing better than throwing a topic out there and just let it go.
Right. So I always say to my classes, there's going to be a slide behind you that's going to have a topic on it and probably have some wording on that. Mm-hmm. That's just a guide for us. We're going to talk as professionals here about how we feel about these concepts, about these dynamics. And that's, you know, one of the first things I always do is I ask everybody, how much experience do you have in your field? And I just kind of do I add it in my head. And I always say, okay, we've got, you know, 200 years, 250 years of experience in this room.
Right.
So it's crazy for me to think I know more about this topic than you do collectively.
Exactly.
So I want to get your feedback. Yeah. So that's really what we're about as a training company.
Right. One of us is never as smart as all of us,
no,
right?
No.
And so how do we do it?
Well, we offer very, very competitive training partnerships and hosting agreements. So if you are a law enforcement agency, a fire department, you know, whatever your field is, if you want to host one of our trainings, you will get free spots in the class. So if you're a police department, you're going to get 3 free seats for your officers. And depending on what the class is, that could be $1,000, $1,500 worth of free training.
Mm-hmm.
To say nothing about the fact that your officers don't have to travel now.
Exactly.
Because the training's right there on site. We just ask that you provide a media-friendly room for us and, you know, some coffee and that kind of stuff. And we ask that you partner with us in promoting the class, getting the flyers out, getting the word out on your training networks, et cetera.
If you're interested in hosting, you can reach us at hosting@gs-pcc.com. Again, that's hosting@gs-pcc.com. And Josh, what do we offer? What do we do?
So our next class, just to give you an idea, is Field Training Officer. So that'll be coming up in June. That's June 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th. That's at Saco PD in Saco, Maine. And that's really one of our top classes. We'll be flying in Phil White, who runs the San Jose Field Training Academy. He'll be teaching that class. But we offer all kinds of classes. We have leadership development. We have interview and interrogation, juvenile law. We have patrol skill build.
Drug investigation.
Drug investigations. Yep, that's a very popular one.
Working, controlling, and managing major cases with John Girardi.
Yep. Digital forensics and social media, which is taught by members of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Yes. Those are guys. Yep. So we've got many IA, internal investigations.
That's a new one. Yep. Just put that one on the board.
We've got some great, great classes. I can't remember the last time we had a class that really wasn't well received.
I agree.
So,
I agree. All right, let's get going. Cue the music. All right, here we are. How you doing, Josh?
I am doing great. Before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out.
Great news.
Yeah. My daughter gave me a call, and her middle school, Portsmouth Middle School, the band and chorus, they just took platinum at the Great East Music Festival out in Western Massachusetts. So I wanted to give a shout out to Emily and all of her teammates on the band and the chorus. Congratulations, guys.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Very excited for them. Yeah, they do a great job. I've seen all of their concerts, obviously, locally, and I enjoy them. Their program there is great. The kids are great, the instructors, the school really supports the arts. It's a great thing for her to be a part of. Very happy and very proud of them.
Yeah, and as a musician and father of musicians, I can say that it truly enhances the life of the kids who do it. I mean, I know sports has a huge impact on people's futures, but so does music.
Yes.
It really does. And I don't know if you've ever known this or not, but a very, very large population of your musicians, people who are in your band and your arts, are also honor roll people.
Yes.
So that's it's kind of
I wish I was a musician because as I get older, it's tougher to play the sports that I used to play, but you can continue to play music.
I do.
Yes.
Every day.
Yeah. I don't know anybody that gets up in the morning and is feeling, a drum injury from 20 years ago.
Occasionally, hands or maybe my wrist hurts or something, or blister.
Rogers is laughing at us here. He's
it's like, why did I sign up to do this? All right, well, that's a good way to get going here. Why don't we start talking to Rogers over here? So we have Rogers Johnson of the Seacoast NAACP chapter. Welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, Josh and Tim. And Josh, I'd like to first say congratulations to her daughter for her musical accomplishments with her classmates at Portsmouth Junior High School.
Well, middle school. Portsmouth Middle School.
Yes. So congratulations to her and all of her classmates for probably a job well done.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very excited for her.
Mm. Yes. Nice. Nice. So should I call you Rogers or call you Mr. Johnson?
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Mr. President. Should we call you Mr. President?
or Mr. President.
Actually, I wouldn't even go that far. But Rogers is fine. That's fine.
All right, Rogers. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your history here in New Hampshire? Were you in the military?
No, I was not. Although I have to say I was associated, so to speak, with the military way back when. But that's going even before my history here in New Hampshire. So we'll just let that. I was actually transferred by a corporation that was in Greenwich, Connecticut, to take over their Boston office that had lost its principal player, and he had taken most of the employees and most of the clients. So my task was to come here and rebuild that office, which was extremely tough given the circumstance.
Okay.
The thing that was interesting is just that I could have lived anywhere in Massachusetts or in Rhode Island even or here, and I chose New Hampshire. And that should say something about New Hampshire.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I love the state. I moved here in '95, and I've been very happy. The winters can be a little tough, I will say that. But
I've been in plenty of places where winters were just as bad.
I grew up in Florida.
So. I grew up. See, it's the thing. I'm from New York originally. I spent 6 years of my life in Ohio, out in the plains, so to speak, in the flatlands, farming country, and. Once the wind gets on the other side of the Rockies, there's nothing really to stop it until the Atlantic Ocean.
That's
so
true.
So it gets such picks up speed. So it's really cold.
They had a very cold winter this year. It was brutal. Yeah. Well, worse than we had it.
Well, we have a field training class that is probably it's going to be coming up in the end of 19, beginning of 20, out in Michigan. And I was talking with our contact out there, and I said, we're going to be flying our instructor from California. What is the weather going to be like? Is it going to be really cold? And he said, it'll hit double digits, not a big deal. And I said, I don't know if you understand that this guy's coming from San Jose, California. He's not going to do well if it's 12 out, okay? But that's the Midwest, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There's nothing to stop that wind.
Yeah.
All right. So cool. All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your role in the Seacoast NAACP and how you got involved with that?
interesting. When I first came here in 1995, I was engaged by several individuals who wanted me to participate with the local, that at the time was the Portsmouth, it changed its name to the Seacoast NAACP, okay, because we really expanded our footprint.
Yep.
And I did. And what had happened was is that as time went by, individuals thought that I could actually serve a bigger role, and so they elected me to be the treasurer of the organization, which I was for 14 years. And then the president decided to step down, and I was kind of left in a box, meaning they were going to nominate one person to be president and nobody else. And I said, okay. So,
were you even there? Was it one of those where you...
So you got voluntold? Yeah.
By acclamation. I had no choice. So they made me president. A term ago, I'm now in my second term as president.
How long are the terms?
The terms are just 2 years.
Okay.
So, I'm right in my really third year of the first year of the second term. In that capacity, again, the real job is to basically lead the branch in direction toward making sure that we enforce civil justice, civil rights, social justice, wherever we can within the Seacoast, and that entails our footprint running from Rochester to Seabrook, including two towns in Maine, which is Kittery and Elliott. When you think about it, it's not terribly big. For example, the branch footprint isn't as big as, say, Boston or Providence, but for New Hampshire, the way the towns run together, it's fairly large, although in reality, the minority population that exists within that footprint is really small.
Right. Yeah.
The vast majority of our members are Caucasian, for example, and most people would never come to that conclusion, meaning putting one together. The NAACP, the National Association of Colored Peoples, most people don't understand that white is a color.
Sure.
So they can be, and if you really go back to the very founding of the NAACP back in 1909, most of the original members were white. People don't know that.
I had no idea.
So yeah, that's the thing to keep in mind. It's civil justice doesn't know a color.
Right.
Civil rights doesn't know a color. So we advocate on behalf of everybody.
Right.
Yep. Good. Could I ask a question?
Sure.
You mentioned leadership. Is it challenging because the organization is made up of a lot of leaders? People who get involved with the NAACP, they already probably have a leadership component or dynamic to their personality. And now you have to be the leader. I would assume there's some challenges there. A lot of alpha dogs.
The challenge is in dictating, deciding, coming to a consensus as to what direction you need to take. Sometimes it's very simple because the events surrounding you lead you in a specific direction. More often than not, you have to come to a conclusion as to which way you want to go and understanding what your limitations are. You can't do everything as much as you'd like to. Mm-hmm. So the consensus must be formed that this is the things that we need to do, the area where we need to go, in order to accomplish those things that we deem to be most important. The question, of course, is figuring out what things are important.
Right, and prioritizing.
Trying to prioritize, but again, sometimes the events get ahead of you and that becomes the priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, yeah, yeah.
So what do you guys have going on right now? Because I know you are very busy.
I'm glad you asked that question. One of the things that we're trying to do, in many ways, it's good that we're talking on a police podcast, is that we're trying to engage the local police departments and to a certain extent the state police department. And just last night I had a conversation with new police commissioner, state police commissioner of public safety, Robert Quinn.
Bob Quinn, yep.
Yeah. I had an excellent relationship with John Barthelms, who is the former, and I still have that relationship. Just formed the new one. In terms of the things that we hope to accomplish with them, I have a relationship with Colonel Wagner and the two command majors, And when you think about it, I'm just a local, you know, Seacoast NAACP. How in the world do I have that type of relationship with the state police? But it goes farther than that. Almost every chief in the Seacoast we have a relationship with, because it is important to us to foster that relationship with the local police departments, because our interaction with them is a way to lessen the tension that was unnecessarily, in my mind, built up between the public and the police. If we can lessen that tension, we then have a better opportunity of understanding between us and the police. I've always said to many of my members and to anybody else who will listen, things are less likely to happen if that police officer who happens to stop you for a traffic stop also knows the person on the other side. Yeah.
If there's a relationship already.
Precisely. So we establish those relationships for the purposes of lessening the tension. But more importantly, having people understand what the role of the police is. Conversely, having the police understand who the public are, what individuals are that they're going to encounter.
Yeah, so exactly. Which kind of goes to what you were saying at one time about the Pelian principles, in that police officers need to be a representation of their community that they serve.
It's funny you bring that up. Many, many years ago, when I was a college student, there was a fight that broke out basically at a party. And there were a number of members of, I will say, the black student community that were kind of on one side of the fight, and a bunch of other members of, I'll call it, the white student community. And I don't want to call it a racial fight, but you know that it clearly there was a that was a divide. And I was kind of coming upon this. Basically, I was going to get into the fight, and this guy that I played sports with, a black student, he turned and he said, "Stokel, do you know these guys?" And I said, "Yeah." "Do you know those guys?" And he said, "Yeah, you better get over here so we can figure this out." And he and I, and thank God, because that guy was a tough, tough guy, basically ended the fight, you know.
Right.
Probably not as quickly as we'd have liked to. You know, there was some people that got pretty banged up. But I remember, again, this is 25 years ago, thinking, this is the result of me having a relationship with some of the students on one side, and it was really just through sports. Was how he and I had become friends.
Right.
And, you know, so I think that kind of speaks to what, because we had found a common interest, which was sports, and had hung around, and neither of us had any hang-ups of a black kid from, he was from Hartford, and a white kid from New Hampshire becoming friends, and, you know, just had a lot of the same interests. And so that ended up kind of quelling a incident that could have gotten much, much worse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that's kind of what you're talking about, is you make relationships with people that maybe aren't from exactly the same background, but that's how you build that bridge, I think.
In many ways, designed to lessen the tensions, but more importantly, open up the lands of communication so that people are talking to one another.
Talking to.
One of the things I always said is that because we do this, we are less likely to have a Ferguson here.
Right.
That's the most important thing, and that's the only way I know how to go out and grab people by the heartstrings and say, let's make sure that we don't do that.
Right.
Yep. Now, of course, people look at you and think, well, it's the police. Well, we've done a wonderful job in this country of vilifying the police. It's better that we now take our time to understand who they are so that we have a good understanding of what they're likely to do given a circumstance. Again, on the same principle, they're more understanding of who we are. It's difficult because the standard police department in New Hampshire, now it doesn't matter where it is, has very few people of color, if any.
True.
Most of the police departments that I know, most of the individuals who populate those departments have not grown up in this country with the black experience. We can state what that is, but until they actually envision it, live it, they don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. I worked in Londonderry, and there was a great kid. He's no longer there, Nelson Jimenez, and he's so funny. But he would often make jokes, you know, you picking on the black man, you know. Mm. It was all in jest, but he was a gymnast in college, right? And a very good athlete, but talked just like me because he grew up here in New Hampshire, you know. Yep. And he would often, you know, cite, you know, issues with the black community. But it was, you know, he was just trying to pick on us a bit. But you're right. They don't have the same experience that you're talking about, like here in New Hampshire. New Hampshire's a very white state. Let's face it.
Yeah. Now, let me ask, and this is maybe a little off the topic, but I participate in a program called Leadership Seacoast, and we actually had the director on our show a couple of months ago. We had our Arts and Culture Day 2 days ago, and there was a young man that grew up in New Orleans. His mother, I guess, works at UNH, University of New Hampshire. Yeah. He's 19, young black male, moved up here, and he's working, doing some things with the Black Heritage Trail and the African Burial Ground here in Portsmouth. And he said, I think you're going to see a lot more diversity. We won't be as homogenous, he said, if for no other reason. If I understand, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but because there's some interest here. And you start learning about the history of the Seacoast, and you find out that there were slaves in New Hampshire, which a lot of people, that's what I mean. A lot of people would not understand that or would not have realized that. And he said, you're probably going to see an influx of diversity because there's an interest to learn about the Black Heritage Trail, to see the African Burial Ground, so on and so forth. Are you seeing that kind of thing? And what impact will that have with the exposure to diversity for law enforcement and everybody?
Well, what it really means is that there's going to be a need, not just for law enforcement, but for education, for the business society, that there's going to be a need for more diversity to take place, not just in the Seacoast, but for New Hampshire in general. Now, there's another reason for that to happen. if you look at New Hampshire as a state, this is a nice place to live.
Sure.
The standard of living is good. The education programs are excellent. Mm-hmm. Forget about the cultural appeal, meaning the Seacoast, the mountains, the lakes. All those things are all draws. And notwithstanding the last 6 weeks, it's relatively safe to live here.
Sure.
Why wouldn't a person of color who has means, who is a professional, if you were going to find a place to live to bring up your children, why not here? And so what New Hampshire has to now start to deal with is the fact that tomorrow when you wake up, your next door neighbor isn't necessarily going to be worshiping the same God you did, have the same color, or speak the same language necessarily that you did.
Right.
So what the state has to begin to understand is to accept that change. Now, notice I said the words accept, not tolerate, because honestly, I can tolerate everybody in this room and still hate them.
Mm. Right.
But if I learn to accept who they are,
yep,
what their background is, where they come from, mm-hmm, I am much more likely to be able to communicate and get along with that individual. And so that's what we need to teach here, just generally acceptance of the changes that are happening, because they're going to happen. We're going to get more people of color moving here because this is a good and decent place to live with good and decent people. And as that word gets out, you're going to have much more diversity happening here. And we should need to embrace that. The main reason, our economic development as a state is largely dependent upon our ability to become more diverse. We are an older state.
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep young people here? Yep. What are the things that they want? They want more diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So the more diverse we become, the more likely we are to keep the people who come here, go to college, and now have a reason to stay. Corporations will come here because we're more diverse. We have a younger population to deal with. They'll come and locate here. It's a cycle that will build our economic.
And it's interlocking.
It is very much interlocking. But more importantly, we're going to be doing that to the detriment to our surrounding states. Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut can't say that. they'll tell you, oh, they're growing. But if you look at the overall growth, New Hampshire outpaces all of them and will continue to do so. So from an economic standpoint, it is definitely necessary that we do that. Most people don't make that connection.
Right.
I just did.
Yeah, yeah. And from what I understand, New Hampshire is very business friendly as well.
Theoretically.
So getting back, I guess, to the relation between the police and the people, you know, you already, and both of us have already kind of talked about building those relationships. I have a theory that police departments, I don't want to say that they need to go out and recruit people of color. However, I think that police departments need to recruit the best and the brightest. And I say this, I have taught collegiately for many years, and I always say, when I came into law enforcement, just about everybody looked like me, okay? 6 feet tall, white guy, 200 pounds, mm-hmm. You know, maybe they went to the military, maybe they were in college. We need to break that mold, and we need to say the best and the brightest. And just by sheer numbers, then you should get diversity. You should, in theory. I'm just curious as to your thoughts. To me, there needs to be some change from within.
Well, the thought is valid. The execution is the problem, because they're looking at a gene, a population pool here in New Hampshire that doesn't have a whole lot of people of color in it. Therefore, mm-hmm. when you cast your net within New Hampshire, you're not going to get a whole lot. The thought process here should be, if you would like to have diversity within your various industries, not just the police, but in particular the police, then you need to start looking a little farther afield.
Sure.
Meaning there are criminal justice majors or individuals who are taking law enforcement courses with the idea to become a police officer at, say, UMass Lowell. So why aren't we going to their job fairs and saying, hey, New Hampshire's a great place to live. How about looking at becoming a police officer in New Hampshire, or maybe UMass Amherst,
yep. or UMass Dartmouth, or Bridgewater State.
How about Connecticut?
Yeah,
Rhode Island, NYU, St. John's University. How about going to historically black colleges and university? Say North Carolina A&T. Find that student who's majoring in criminal justice and say, look, normally you would want to go back to Charlotte,
right,
or Columbia, but you know, we have an opportunity here where you can become a police officer. Yes, we know it's a little less diverse, but the standard of living is good. I understand that you may want to go back to the community you know, but we have some opportunities here. And bring those individuals, those students, whether offer them an internship for a summer, because they're going to have to do that if they want to be a police officer.
Yep.
Let's do that, offer them something. Some of those individuals will probably go back to where they're from, but one or two may come here.
Yeah.
And all and I want people to understand this. This is not an affirmative action program. This is an opportunity for somebody to apply for a position. They may not get it.
Right.
But if they don't apply, you'll never have the opportunity to have that officer in front of you. You can do the same thing for teachers. Look,
any industry, yeah.
BAE Systems is trying to create an organization in Manchester. They need 400 engineers. Do you think I can get 25 black engineers out of UMass Lowell, MIT, Harvard? Mm-hmm. The answer is, of course I can.
Yeah.
Well, if they're coming, they're bringing their families with them, aren't they?
Right.
And then their friends are coming to visit, and now you've got momentum.
And now you have diversity in not just Manchester, but now Bedford or Hudson. This is what we're talking about. Yep. They're going to want to see teachers of color. We need to create that by thinking differently about how we go about getting individuals to come here. We have to go get them.
Right. I agree. It sounds like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but New England College.
Yes.
We do a program there where we teach people how to prepare for the law enforcement testing mm-hmm. process. And I have never seen a more diverse campus.
Yeah. It is the picture of diversity for New England, in my opinion.
Are you familiar with
New England? I am familiar. The question is, where do they all go when they leave?
That's a good question.
Well, I know one guy
who it
looks like is getting hired in Concord. One guy that we really were impressed by.
Yeah.
A real street.
New York.
Yeah, real street wise kid. Was one of the few guys during our crime scene program that kind of figured it out.
He's got good street smarts. Yes. He really does.
Yes. And we really liked him.
Yeah. I think he's getting hired by Concord.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
So he's going through the academy now?
I don't know. We got an email from the professor saying thank you for, you know, what you do for our students. And his name was one of the names that's in a process here in New Hampshire. Now, if I don't mean to cut you off, Tim, you were talking about recruitment and, you know, searching far and wide. I've always talked about or said Ferguson. You were talking about it earlier. I felt that the public missed the boat by focusing so much on the singular issue between the officer and Michael Brown. And the real issue, in my mind, if you look at the demographics of the community and the demographics of the police department, how do you have a community that's in the greater St. Louis area that is it has a very diverse population, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a police department of, I can't remember how many, but they had less than 5% of the department are people of color. That just doesn't match up. To me, you're either you are trying to not recruit people of color, or you've created an environment where people of color don't want to. Exactly. Yeah. That was, I kind of felt that was the bigger issue that I was looking at. You know, and I'm not trying to minimize a singular issue, but I said, that's a singular issue. There's a broader picture here that has to be looked at. So I'm just curious as to, Tim Rogers, what your takeaway is from that.
Well, it was to my understanding, I'm not sure about the police department, but at least with the town or the city government, wasn't it a pretty fair reflection of the demographics?
I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
All right. I think the town government was, mm-hmm. you know, from the mayor down. But the police department, I'm not sure of the demographics there.
Yeah. It's my understanding it was over 95% white.
Okay.
Which, again, I'm not saying that a police department being a majority of white people is a bad thing per se, but I'm just saying this is not an accurate reflection of the community, especially when you consider not only is Ferguson a community that I can't remember what the exact demographics, but you're right outside St. Louis.
Right.
Which is not
probably, and I'm sure Rogers can comment on this, many factors in that. Maybe they're because of the culture in that area. They have such a dislike for police officers.
Or distrust.
They don't want to be involved with it. They want to go do other things. They want to go take other jobs and not even get into that world.
Yep. So is that where Ferguson, for instance, I'm not trying to beat up on Ferguson either, but has to say, we're not going to be able to get that diversity here, so we got to spread our wings a little bit and maybe recruit it from the outside to start, because then we can get our local people to stay and want to be police officers here and change things from the inside.
Well, one of the things that's important is that you have to have an understanding of what the community is all about. And so in terms of having a police force, the police force should be by and for the people. That didn't take place because no one was really recognizing who the community was and who are the individuals who are going to be responsible for the protection of that group. Now, having said that, one of the things that people have, and I've already said it, have done to create this atmosphere is we've so vilified the police department that no one wants to have the job. In fact, if you talk to the average black person in any major city and talk to them about being a police officer, 9 times out of 10, that thought has never entered their mind because of their opinion of what the police actually represent. So in order to change that dynamic, primarily in major cities, you're going to have to do something, and that is find a way to lessen or to alter the opinion of people, especially people of color, about what the police are designed to do, what they are. The most important thing to keep in mind that people tend to forget is that when there is an altercation, when there is an issue, the people who get in the middle of it are the police.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you want that level of protection and understanding, it's probably best for you to then begin to have the conversation with the police and recognize that you're going to need representation, because the people of color who are part of the police department have a way of trying to educate other police officers who are not black, who who are not people of color as to what that person is thinking during this period of time when you most need that level of understanding. When you have that scenario, you are less likely to have an unnecessary incident action because there's a level of comprehension as to what that person is thinking. They're not going to get it every time, mm-hmm. but it's a lot easier when their partner happens to be a person of color and saying, hold off, think about it, walk in this person's shoes and understand. You got to remember, for the even today, most black people have been taught, inculcated over time, that an individual police officer is there to protect the white community and not you. They're there to a point to do anything and get away with everything at your expense. Mm-hmm. Understand this, for years, everyone was taught, I was taught, that in America, white people can do anything to you and get away with it. That's the way we've been brought up. So you have to begin to change that thought process. It's a very difficult thing to do if you've been taught that over 300 years.
Yeah, it doesn't happen in a day.
No.
No.
Right.
So you have to work on that.
Well, that comes back to our very first episode, Tim, where you said, I challenge every police department to change from police department to police service. And I think that that kind of plays into a little bit of what Rogers is saying is, as police departments, we talk about the warrior versus guardian mindset. Mm-hmm. That's where the guardian mindset comes in.
Right.
Is being able to build those relationships in your communities.
Right.
You know, I think it, and you hit it right on the head. It's you, when you have a system that has been created over many, many, many years, it's going to take many, many, many years to turn that tide the other way.
Right.
So, yep.
All right. Well, Rogers, I want to ask you, what is your view or your opinion of the Black Lives Matter movement?
The Black Lives Movement originated based on the concept that police officers were willfully, neglectingly, just creating out-and-out murders mm-hmm. of black individuals, mostly black men, mm-hmm. Without any accountability throughout the country. And given the circumstance, it's not hard to see how they could come to that conclusion. Where I think they went wrong is that they were very antagonistic in terms of not just blaming the police department, but asking for the entire mechanism to be torn down. My approach would have been, we need a better way of training police officers. And again, this is more specific to large cities,
sure.
which most people didn't get, mm-hmm. Because large cities have a better ability to conduct this training than you would in rural police jurisdictions. The money's not there. There needs to be diversity training. There needs to be active shooter scenarios so people can understand when to pull a gun, when not to. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that was happening in a lot of circumstance. I also think that there was a culture in many police departments where they viewed people of color, black individuals, instantly as potential threats to them in their overall approach. So the instant aspect of, from a police department is to come in fully armed, hand on the weapon, not willing to really accept what they're seeing as, let's take an evaluation here. The evaluation instantly was, this person's a threat, I need to protect myself.
Do you think that's based on some past experiences, though? From what I understand, that black men are more likely to resist arrest and to commit acts of violence against the police more so than white people. And could that be...
And there's a reason for that.
They go, okay, let's talk about that.
the reason is that in growing up, you're accustomed to thinking, this person is going to harm me, so I'm going to make sure I get the first, excuse the language, shot. I'm going to protect myself. Yeah. that's
I'm going to get my licks in first.
Yeah, yeah, I need to protect myself. And so automatically it's an adversarial relationship on the very beginning.
Just as soon as you lock eyes, it's adversarial.
Precisely. That's because you know you've been told that this person is going to kill me. That's the thought process. So that's why you have this instant reaction.
I think that comes back to exposure, though.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take it a completely different direction. Prior to our broadcast today, Tim and I were checking out a new location at a local radio station here in Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. There was a dog in the radio station. Now, I'm a dog guy. I like dogs. I'm sitting there, and this dog came up to me and was crawling all over me, right? And one of the DJs said, he really likes you. And I said, well, she really likes you. And I said, well, it's just I'm a dog person, right? Mm-hmm. Because I grew up with dogs. I like dogs. If I see dogs, I make sure I want to go over and pet them. I know people that a dog comes around, they get nervous. The dog senses it, and now you got a problem. I think it's the same thing with police and people of color. Everybody starts getting nervous. That tension starts to build, and what ends up happening? Somebody says, I got to get my licks in first, or I'm going to take action here maybe a little bit too quickly or waits too long to take action because they want to remain politically correct, and then things get out of hand and now they have to take a much stronger action. I just the tension that you're talking about, I think that builds up because of that lack of exposure to each other. I can't say it enough. I think that is such a key component of the solution. The long-term solution is police and all people spending more time together, spending time talking instead of constantly, the police circling the wagons and civil rights groups trying to bang down the door. Mm-hmm. How about we open up the door and just sit down and talk? I think we could make a lot of progress.
Maybe it's easier said from our perch here in New Hampshire, but I certainly agree with you.
Rogers, I don't know how you – maybe I'm oversimplifying it.
No, because that's the approach I've taken with the Seacoast NAACP. I have been very approachable to the police, encourage my members of our branch to do the same. We have every year a Martin Luther King Day breakfast in January.
It was delicious, by the way.
We send out.
I went.
We send out invitations to the local police to interact with the members of our branch. But a lot of the people in the room aren't necessarily members. They're just social justice advocates or civil rights advocates. The point being is all of a sudden these individuals see a whole lot of police officers coming to our event. You wouldn't normally see that. But we do that for the purposes of making sure that the community sees the police in a positive fashion having breakfast.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better way to get that interaction by just inviting everybody to sit down and share a meal about a pretty prominent slain civil rights leader.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with it and everything to gain. And because we do that, as I said, we have now formed relationships with not just the police departments of two counties, Stratford and Rockingham County, but the county attorneys and the state police as well. So anything we can do to not just, I would say, lessen the tensions, but have an overall approach where people can begin to see individuals as people is a good and decent thing to do for the good and decent people of just the Seacoast and the state of New Hampshire. That's my opinion, and it's largely shared by our branch. So,
yep.
All right.
No, I agree.
I'm going to leave you with two questions here. So what advice would you give to a young person of color if they have an interaction with the police? What advice would you give them? And vice versa, what advice would you give to a new police officer that is out interacting with people of color? Do you have any suggestions along those lines?
Why are you smiling like that?
my phone's ringing. But
and then we'll let you off the hook.
Yeah. The first thing is that everyone, every young black person who encounters a police officer, you should do the first thing is, one, introduce yourself. Stick out your hand. Say hello. Make sure that you understand who this person is and he understands who you are. Greet them. Understand. Mm-hmm. The reason is again, a month later, you're going to be walking down the street and you need help. And that same police officer may be the person to give you help.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, understand what the role of the police are. What are they supposed to do? What things should you be doing when you interact with them?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you answer the questions. Don't give any police officer a reason to suspect that your motives are unclear
right.
or somewhat suspect.
Right.
And for those who are interested in becoming a police officer, it's not a bad position to have. Again, in New Hampshire, it's relatively safe. Pay's not great, but it's steady, decent, good work, and there's nothing to be ashamed about.
Right. That's so, that change from within, I think.
Exactly. We need to begin to encourage more people to consider that as a potential. Why we don't do that, I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm doing. We're in the process, of course, of trying to find police officers for minority police officers for departments. We found one for Chief Kyle True of our Newmarket, who happened to be a person retiring from the Coast Guard. We have two bases here, the Coast Guard base and, of course, the Navy base.
Mm-hmm.
There are people of color who work there who right. will be transitioning out. Yeah. Why aren't we over there talking to these individuals right now? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Again, for the various departments, and I say this from a recruiting standpoint, go out and recruit not necessarily locally, but everywhere, because we're going to need minority police officers and we're going to need them sooner. Now, I've already forgotten your second question.
It was just...
Flip it around.
Yeah, for a new police officer who is dealing with maybe Manchester or something, who's dealing with someone of color, what would be your advice to first steps?
For places like Manchester, Nashua, even here in Portsmouth, they're already in the process of doing it, the job of reaching out to the community. Even the state police has had a good opportunity of reaching out to, say, in Concord, their Bhutanese population, because it became important for them to do that. They've done the same thing with the Indonesian population up in Rochester, Somersworth, and Dover.
Okay.
Because, again, knowing how that population reacts to a person of law enforcement was very important for them to understand what they were seeing when that population was presented in front of them. Here in the United States, when we're stopped, we roll down our window and we deal with the police officer. But the Indonesian population doesn't look a police officer in the face. They're designed to say, okay, we're getting out of the car. Here in the United States, we think when an individual is getting out of the car, they're trying to confront us.
Right.
That's a sign of respect for an Indonesian population. And until you teach people that, they don't know.
That's where that training comes in.
And that's where that training comes in.
And that has to start at the academy.
Yes.
That has to start at day one.
And one of the things that's happened at the academy is that they're beginning to start that process in terms of teaching young police officers, but that only goes so far. How many police officers out there have been trained at the academy but are 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, and did they have this training? The answer is probably not.
Yep.
We need to go back and redo
this. Or even having a booster every so often is to say you're going to go to a one day and it's going to be cultural trends and things that you need to be aware of.
You probably need some type of diversity training every 2 years or so.
Some sort of reflective leadership.
You do sexual harassment every year.
Yeah. Are you saying you want to work for us?
at this point, nobody's offered, so what can I tell you?
This was a job interview.
We'll talk. Yeah, we'll talk after the episode.
All right, we're getting close on time here, so we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Rogers. This was great.
I didn't do
this. This was very nice. Well, I mean, just to let you know what this podcast is all about is we just want to bridge gaps between police officers and the people they serve. And this is just one step in that direction.
Sure.
So for anyone who's listening. All right, so For anyone who wants to listen to this podcast on several platforms, we can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and Alexa. For all you social media people, we are pretty active out there. We can be found on Twitter at GSPCC1, Facebook, facebook.com/GSPCC1, on Instagram, instagram.com/GSPCC, and we do put out a monthly newsletter. It's very easy to sign up if you just go to our website, which is gs-pcc.com. Up in the right-hand corner, it's very, very easy to sign up. All right, that's all we have. Thank you again, Rogers, for being here.
My pleasure. Greatly
appreciate it. Anything from you, Josh?
No, just one last shout-out to the PMS band.
Yes,
and
congratulations.
And the chorus. For platinum at the Great East Music Festival. Congratulations.
Congratulations. And I apologize if the sound quality is not good. Our engineer was taking a final and the loser. And and he's going to be piecing this together and hearing this, by the way. So we miss you, Lucas. We do, buddy. All right. That's it. Thank you all. Take care.